Fearless Radio. No FCC. No apologies, man. I don't give a fuck, man. Turn it off. Go ahead. Turn it off. Why are you still listening?
Fisher's Flicker here on Fearless Radio, the new music binge. You can check them out Saturday. They got a show coming up at Martyrs. It's $8 at the door, and they're going to be going on around 11. But I got a couple of them in the studio with me right now. Guys, welcome into Fearless.
Thank you, Justin.
Thanks.
Let's get some introductions. Name, what you do for the band?
Scott Fisher, and I guess I'm the Fisher behind Fisher's Flicker. So I make up for whatever everybody else doesn't do.
My name is Turan Yan. I play bass, supporting vocals, maybe some spiritual guru and current engineer, I suppose, and some new recordings upcoming, but that's about it.
Yeah. But we don't have everybody here. Who are we missing?
We are missing Tim Kubiak. He's one of our guitar players. Very colorful, wonderful player. A guy named Mario Chardy gives a lot of flair to the other guitar. And Tim Gavin, he's on the drums.
How did you guys all originally meet? How were these paths crossed?
Yeah, that gets very incestuous. we've been around in lots of different incarnations over the years. We started out as a band called Deja Voodoo back in the late 90s and mid-90s, I think. And we got a nice cease and desist order over that name. So then we had to have a name change and many personnel changes over the years. But everybody that's in the band right now has been in the band at one time or another. Everybody's kind of alumni.
If you want to get real historical, Scott and I were actually in our first bands together when we were about 14 years old.
Really?
Yeah. And then several years later, I joined up with the Deja Voodoo thing. Then I stepped away for like probably 10, 12 years and came back to this now. Because a man just keeps writing great songs, I think.
Now, was this all in, like, the Chicago area? Is that where you guys were born and raised?
Yeah, most of us. Everyone actually, except for the one of the guitar players, Tim, is from Colorado. But Scott and I grew up, you know, maybe less than a mile from each other in Park Ridge. The current drummer, Timmy, Gavin.
A couple blocks away.
He's like two blocks from my house, my old house I grew up in. And a guy named Mario was just in the next neighborhood over in Edison Park, you know, just like probably about 12 blocks away. So we were all, you know, and then we all just kind of gone in different like journeys musically, but we've all kind of found ourselves in the same circles, you know, incestuously between bands, you know, playing with everybody.
I like how the word incestually has made it in here twice already.
You know.
Anyway,
bizarro.
It's a love thing.
You guys have been in Chicago or the Chicago area for quite a while. Then, let's say you guys had a buddy who's coming to Chicago and had never been to the city before. He was going to be here for like a long weekend. How would you show him a good time? Where would you take him in Chicago?
First off, I'd turn him on to some of the food that this city has to
offer.
Yeah,
where are you going?
Good point.
Where are we going? I don't know.
Can you be biased?
I guess I could say the Aberdeen Tab's a great place. I would for music, I would try to go to Double Door. You know, if you want something edgier and a great bar to hang out at, there's always Liar's Club. Quenchers is a great...
Depending on what night you're at Liar's Club.
Yeah, that's true.
I would personally recommend Martyrs to me, and I'm not being biased because our shows are this weekend, but to me, that stands out as my favorite venue for that size.
Definitely for consistency of quality music.
Yes, and quality sound. I love the sound system there. Nice stereo PA and great staff. And I love a lot of the lineups that I see. Very eclectic, very all over the place. I don't know. I'm a fan.
Kind of putting me on the spot. It's like you think of a million great places to hang out in this town, whether it's food, music, you know, art, you know, theater, you name it.
Yeah,
there's
or
always an option.
Park, or I mean, yeah.
So there's five members in the band, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Has there ever been any talks of adding a sixth member for any reason? Or are you guys happy with five?
There were times way back in the beginning that the highest it's ever been is 13.
A 13-piece. Like a core 13-member band.
Absolutely. We had a whole horn section.
Backup girls.
Yeah. It was, you know, the works. We had a monkey in there. No, we didn't have a monkey, but might as well have. But it was, you know, that's back when people had less responsibilities, and it was nice and easy to have people come and go. It was kind of a crapshoot on who was going to show up to the next rehearsal, or let alone, for that matter, which gig, who was going to come to the gig.
It's like, think about trying to get, you know, nowadays, you know, getting five guys together once a week can be challenging to work on material. Think about, you know, 13
right.
these days. Back then, it was possible to do it three times a week. So,
well, how often do you guys get together, the five of you, for practice now?
Not often enough. Through the advent of computer technology and that, I think we've really done a good job of trying to make sure that everybody makes the best of our time together, because it is sparing. To answer your question, I don't know. I'd say
ideas and tracks and things like that can easily be emailed back and forth. People, you know, thing is that we've all in some sort of format played in different musical projects with each other for many years, that, you know, all that hard work that was put in the past has come into an experience of where, you know, we all rely on each other to be decent enough musicians where we can just show up prepared and review and iron out the parts. And then our times together as a band is more catching that gel and that vibe, as opposed to like teaching each other the songs or how to play their instruments.
Now, the five members in the band, I know before you go on stage, you know, 5-10 minutes before your show starts, everybody can kind of be off doing their own thing. You know, somebody outside having a smoke, somebody at the merch table, somebody at the bar, somebody wherever. Is there a straggler in the band? The one member you're always trying to hunt down right before you go on stage?
It's probably me. I'm probably having a drink and a smoke.
That sounds about right.
Figuring it out. I don't know.
And I'm not usually shy to crack the whip on those things, so I'll announce it over the PA. Paging Mr. Young.
Well, my bass rig's so quick to set up. It's like I set it up, and I'm just like, okay. It's just a bass and an amp. These other guys got their pedals and their boards and drums.
Yeah, it never runs out for me personally that with setup, I feel like I'm perpetually either setting things up or taking things down, because there's so much involved. And it seems like with the personnel, how we talked about that before, going from the ridiculous 13 down to 5, mm-hmm. trying to make up for that through other things. So through some of the video production and things that we've gotten into, all that requires even more.
Plus how much more you have to actually play with like two keyboards and multiple parts with both hands. This guy's constantly doing things on stage. He's got to fill in. I mean, you got to fill in strings. You got to fill in whatever
horns.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. All right. We're going to get to the album and the live show stuff here in just a bit, but I got a few more questions before that, all right?
Sure.
Okay. Are you guys going to walk into Martyrs with like a set list already worked up, or are you the kind of band who will leave some room for improv and kind of go from there?
We can't really afford to have the improv right now the way that this show is set up, because of this whole video production thing that we're putting in sync with the show. So as a result, It's hard enough to be spontaneous with the five of us, but then when you add in a VJ on top of it, who's going off of elaborate notes on this, it has to happen at this point. We're a little more robotic in that way. But
there are freedoms, though, if you're asking, like, you know, if you're asking, are we talking about like, are we going to be just throwing in random songs? No. Are we going to have like explore freedoms and things? Yes, there are sections of songs and there are places where we may go longer and quote unquote jam, you know, but it won't be something like a Fish jam where it could go for 25
right.
minutes, you know. But there's freedoms within the songs, but it's pretty, you know, straightforward also. It's
so during the show when you have the videos going, what am I seeing? What's going on?
That kind of came with, again, how we were talking before about everybody's commitments and what people can put time into. And I have a habit of losing my mind trying to push. So in not taking that out on my fellow musicians and bandmates, I decided I would get creative with it, and I took the opportunity and started to make these videos. So they're based off of all over the place, but mostly just B-roll, weird old sci-fi movies, spy movies, drug movies, just all over the place. And trying to have them fit in with what's going on lyrically, what's going on emotion-wise or feeling with the song. So the whole idea was is instead of sitting there and watching your friend's band or whoever you're going to see and giving, say you're playing an hour-long set and you give an honest 8 minutes of your time watching that show and then also going to grab a cocktail, you go out for a smoke, you talk to your buddy you haven't seen for a year. I wanted to do whatever I could to monopolize and get 16 minutes of their time. And how can
engage
I do that?
Engage them a little more.
Yeah. So now not only are we bothering
your... We're not the prettiest guys anymore either.
Well, that's the thing too, right? Yeah. We can only put our feet up so high on the monitors and pout our lips so much. So what we would do is instead of just invading your ear hole is attack your eyes as well with some of these visuals. And hopefully when all things go right, and so far it's proved that way, is that they kind of gel together and all of a sudden you're getting a unique experience that's different from hopefully some of the acts out there.
So did I understand right? You're using bits from like old spy movies and horror movies and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Are you worried about it all like running into like, I don't know if this is even a matter, but like copyright or anything? Like, are you worried about anybody
sure.
Just say, you know, randomly a granddaughter of somebody who made the movie that is being shown on your TV or whatever comes up.
Do you have a big following of these sci-fi movie producers, directors listening?
Well,
to
you never know, man.
Sure.
I know.
You guys have been in how many bands together?
Oh, no, I know.
Like,
no, I do. I think about that stuff all the time. I probably overthink it, and I've talked with a lot of people in trying to figure that out, asking that very same question. And I've been careful in what videos that we've chosen to put out there to promote our show, and then maybe a little less careful with what we use live. But like I said, B-roll, I mean, we're going for, you know, I would like to think personally that we're helping to show something that was lost anyway. These movies, they look to make their millions and didn't, you know. These things didn't even wind up on DVD.
Yeah,
so
these are all clips, too, you know, so it's not like we're like screening The Wizard of Oz and playing Dark Side along with it or something like that and promoting The Wizard of Oz and trying to make money off of that.
Mm-hmm. Right, several seconds here.
It's almost like the video equivalent of what, you know, the hip hop artists and things like that have been doing with sampling of music and taking things like that. I mean, you know, again, you're not, what's the longest clip? 15 seconds, 10 seconds?
Sounds about right.
Now, just to play devil's advocate, though, like with everybody remixing these songs, I'm sure whoever originally wrote that's getting some chunk of the sales.
Not in most cases, I would argue. That you're definitely right if it's, you know...
I believe there was a certain sample limit time that you could take freely
or
something.
8 seconds or eight
really?
Minutes? I can't recall.
I didn't even know
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But I think the laws have changed on that a couple times also. I can't be quoted on that, so I don't want to go too deep into it. I'd rather, you know, just enjoy Scott take the risk on this.
Yeah, it was certainly, it's been fun making the videos and doing all of that. And, you know, it's one of those things, too, where it's like, you know, you have to take some risks, you know. And I would have never done it had I felt that I was taking advantage of somebody's artistic integrity. But I thought that it helped to go along with the show. And these are things that are moved me and I'm turning other people on to. So to me, it's more just like I'm big into albums and that. So it's like, what do you mean you haven't heard of these guys? You got to check out this album. It's kind of a similar thing. And I've had a couple of people who've seen the videos and say, what the heck is that? What the hell is that? You got this thing in here? What happened here? And I saw this spaceship. And I said, oh, that's from, you got to see this as a terrible movie. When I say terrible, I mean fantastic, you know. So I'm a big fan of like these whole bad movies.
In a way, if it gets, we might be helping whoever owns the copyrights, because then maybe somebody asks and then they go rent the film from Netflix or however they would find it, you know.
That's
hopefully
true.
Hopefully not steal it, you know.
Well, where can people find Fisher's Flicker on the internet to stay up to date with new shows and new music?
Well, the easiest way would be the website, and that's fishersflicker.com. What always throws everybody is the spelling of Fisher, F-I-S-C-H-E-R. But that would be the easiest way. Otherwise, all over Facebook and updating that all the time, as well as Twitter.
Catman Don't's been out since July. How long did the recording take?
Oh, that's a great question. way too long. That took, I think, about 7 years.
7 years.
Yeah. So this would be the largest gap between any of my releases to date.
Well, this particular record is probably the most true of a solo project. I mean,
yeah,
most of your writing of this record and recording of the record was basically you without a full band half the
right.
time, right? Yeah, so this is really Scott, you know, being the Fisher's Flicker, if that makes any sense. But
what took the recording so long? Was it just that you would work on it when you had the chance? Were you trying to get into a studio? How did that, what happened?
A lot of happened circumstance of, life getting in the way. I had gotten a bit jaded doing originals way back in like 2004 or so with the revolving door of musicians, and then decided, you know what, screw this. I'm just going to make some cash instead of spending some cash and play covers for a while. So I did covers for quite a while and did fairly well with that, and that kept me busy to the point that the last thing I wanted to do on a day or two off was come back and work on more music. I wanted to just get away from it for a little bit. So that got in the way. Life got in the way as well. And then also in trying to do this on my own, I had recorded, I believe I'd have to double check, but I think every single note was all recorded in my studio. But as I'm looking at it and thinking about it, it was done in at least four different locations.
Really?
I moved twice during that, so that's three of the locations, and then once was quote-unquote on location. Actually, I can think of a fifth as well. At my parents' house, they had a piano at the time that I had recorded at. So it was just recorded all over the place and at my leisure, which is ironic because the whole idea was, oh, now I can spit out albums faster because I'm going to do it all on my own. 7 years later, here it is. And actually, we've changed that whole philosophy now, and Tyrone and I have both been a big advocate of this idea where instead of doing the album, we're convinced that right now the physical medium is becoming more and more of a dinosaur. And trying to keep up with that and with the pace of the band and everything is trying to do things in, say, two-song chunks where we'd release a single or a double-sided single and push that out quicker.
Digitally, you know.
Right. And then once we start to have a big enough collection, it looks like it's going to complete a whole album, we'll hold off on the last few and release it as a physical object. And that's what we're starting out with now and in the process of recording.
Well, you kind of hit up on my next question. It is 2012, and like you said, everything is going digital, whether it's download cards or albums on jump drives. And vinyl's had the huge resurgence in the last couple years. And with all of that, it seems like CDs are falling by the wayside. Will you guys miss CDs if they ever do become like the next 8-track? Do you think they'll become the next 8-track?
I still miss cassettes and vinyl.
They're trying to make a comeback, though. Cassettes are trying to make a comeback.
Yeah. I haven't heard of that one. But the vinyl, definitely, and I see it, and I've been amazed by it. I think, you know, I miss the... I'm a very hands-on person, so I do miss the physical aspect. I also work in computers, so I'm... I
all for the digital?
Totally, yeah.
Well, there was nothing better, man, when you'd go, you know, starting with vinyl, you know, like I would go save up money and go buy a record. And then same with cassettes. And then when CDs came out, it was the same. And it was like, you know, you go pull out that record and you'd pull out the sleeve and you'd be like, what else is in here? What kind of booklets? Is there any stickers? And same with the CDs. Let me open this up and read some lyrics. Let me read the liner notes. Let me see who they thanked, you know. And you'd sit there and you'd just sit on your floor, you know, with the record player, or the cassette player, or the CD player, and you just listen to the tunes, you know, figure it out, like smoke a J, have a beer, and just like read and get really into it. You know, it was more of an experience than just quickly in 3 seconds downloading an MP3 off of iTunes and throwing into the shuffle with the other 7,000 songs you have, and not sitting down to that full album experience. That's the biggest thing that bums me out about where technology has gone, is that you don't get to just sit down and listen to albums as albums, you know, as full pieces. You know, you're just looking for the quick fix for whatever you want, you know.
Well, are you worried at all that that's going to happen with you when you're putting out 2 songs at a time as opposed to a whole album?
No, because I'm a fan of the other, too. I'm just saying I miss it. You know?
And, you know, you bring up a great point, though, because you reminded me of way back in the olden timey days when we started this thing and when we did the first Deja Voodoo disc. I think we really capitalized on that, where I kind of went overboard with that, and I thought, how much stuff can we pack into this CD? And we ended up packing, it said, with live animals inside. We had a sticker on it, and we had this whole story. There was another insert in there of aqua sheep. And they were just brine shrimp. It was sea monkeys, you know, is what most people know them as.
You put them in water and they would grow.
Right, and there was a whole story that if you placed them by the stereo while jamming the album, they would get the subliminal messages in there that they need to take over the world. And it was beautiful. But because of that, like, we've lost that hands-on. And I always had these larger illusions of grandeur of what can we pack into this compact disc format, and had some ideas of a box that the CD came in filled with Easter hay that had even more goodies in it. I was a big fan of that.
So now you're just putting a visual to the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Something to look at the show instead of the box.
No. Yeah, so you can't necessarily touch it, but you can still see it, you know?
I unfortunately wasn't around for, like, the heyday of vinyl and all of that, but I can, just from friends and... friends of friends. I know that when Cheech and Chong came out, they did theirs. Their whole vinyl was covered with a huge rolling paper that was like this big. And you guys have been talking about all the cool stuff that came in vinyls. Give me some. What were your favorite things that would come in vinyl opposed to the record?
All right, that one I think is called the Big Bamboo, if I remember right.
The Cheech and Chong record.
Yeah, it's been a while, but I know what you're talking about. And those things have been all over the place. Like Zappa had a whole. Capitalizing off of the whole Sgt. Pepper's, he did a take off of that. We're Only in It for the Money, and inside he had a nipple badge, and it was a nipple of one of the members of the bands, and it was right there, and you could take it out, and it was absurd. And he had a dollar bill, you know, and off of his own imagery, and had that in there, and just that whole like Turan said, like while I'm listening to this album, the more I could sit there and play with. I had this Chicago. I hate to ever...
You get posters, too, and
yeah.
Stuff like that. I always thought, like Rolling Stones with Sticky Fingers had the zipper on it. Springsteen's Greetings from Asbury Park, New Jersey kind of opened up, like, a postcard or something. You know, it was like, there was cool, unique ways that they were able to package these records. And even the simplest ones, too, even just pulling out Dark Side of the Moon and just having that image, and that's all you just looked at that. And inside was just a clear plastic, you know, holder for the record, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the way across the board, right, to box sets, you know, to where you open it up and it's almost like having a giant book in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And then inside of those, you know, slots where the records are, you'll find more things. It's just, you know, some records would turn into a treasure box and some would just be the record without even a sleeve, you know.
Again, Fisher's Flicker here in the studio for the New Music Binge. You can check them out Saturday at Martyrs. They're going on around 11. It's $8 at the door. I'm guessing there's going to be copies of Catman Don't available at the show?
Yeah, as well as all of our prior releases.
Well, let's get to another song off of the album. What song are we going to play next?
Souls?
Anything you want to say about it before it gets played?
You know, it's always subject to opinion, but I would say that that's the big hit single with a bullet. If there was one that I was to try and capitalize off of with this release, I'd say that's the one that, you know, Grandma and Little Joey both tend to say that they dig. So, not
what
that I know
the,
a Little Joey.
I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say too much, but I know Scott has very honest lyrics, and it's really great because you can kind of go into what him, the writer, is trying to say from his experiences, and then you can almost picture yourself in your own experiences. And the lyrics in this song definitely have that type of vibe, you know, like here's something I've gone through, and, you know, some of the songs can be like giving advice, and some can be screw you. I don't know which one is this one.
And that's a great point, because that's a big thing with this song and a turning point with this album, I would say, is these are my more serious tunes. And this one specifically, I would go along the lines of like Peter Gabriel, where his lyrics, I feel, could, many of his more modern lyrics, can impact anybody, no matter what they're going through. They pull from their own personal life. And that was the idea with this, is it meant something very personal to me. And even within my own life, it meant something to me about somebody in particular, and then turn the page half a year, and it means something totally different, but just, if not more, of an impact concerning somebody else. And Yeah, it just, you know, it has to do with being a true individual and...
So let them rock it.
Yeah.
Is this a song you guys could possibly be doing live at Martyrs on Saturday?
Oh, I'd put money on it, yeah.
All right, we'll be back with more Fisher's Flicker here on Fearless Radio, the New Music Binge.
When you think about your life, come back.
Fisher's Flicker here on Fearless Radio, the New Music Binge. Go check them out at Martyrs on Saturday. They're going on around 11. It's $8 at the door, though. You can pick yourself up a copy of Catman Don't while you're at the show as well. A few more questions for these guys, and I'm going to let them go. Now, I have a pretty awesome job. I get to come in Monday through Friday and talk to 3 to 5 bands a day. If you guys got to sit down and talk to one band or one artist and just got to pick their mind a little bit, who would you guys want to talk to?
Oh, wow.
Wow, that's a heavy one.
Not like the only person. Just like, give me one of the many.
I'd love
sure
to talk to Roger Waters.
Yeah, that would be a great conversation.
Yeah, Roger Waters is one of my favorites, one of the reasons I'm a musician.
You got me into him.
And the way he draws a picture, you know, lyrically, you know, I don't know if that's why I'm so messed up now because I started listening to Floyd and the Wall when I was like in like third grade. Because I thought the name Pink Floyd was a cool band name, but it's unbelievable how you can see things and create images and feel ways that he makes you feel. through complex music and sometimes the most simplest music. You know, like as a bass player, sometimes you're just going da dun da dun da dun da dun, and it'll send chills through your body. You know, like I don't know if I'd ask him how to do that. I think I just like to spend some time with the man.
And, not as an interview, just to have like a beer with him or something,
and let him just talk about just shoot the shit about music and things like that. I don't think I'd be. I think I'd like explode if I started having like an interview with him and asked for answers. I'd rather not have answers from him. But.
And you gonna double up on that, or you got somebody else?
I would certainly concur. Yeah, I would just say because you got me thinking about it as far as somebody that that can tell a story, you know. And it's another person that I would put Roger Waters, absolutely.
Springsteen.
Yeah, definitely more. That's got you written all over it. Yeah. But there's some Springsteen I've enjoyed. But Gabriel is another one that comes to mind for me that's still living, at least. Zappa mm-hmm. would be the pinnacle for me, but that's not going to be possible. But Peter Gabriel, through the stories that he's told over the years, I think he's another guy, and I think he's matured very well with his writing. From Genesis, he was telling these crazy, elaborate, fantasy-oriented stories, and then he's brought it to John Everybody with, well, like we were talking about before with Souls, it's the same kind of idea of saying something to somebody, and it could be something so simple, but... again, like give you those chills and say, like, how did he know that my girlfriend broke up with me last Thursday at Pizza Hut? You know, he just has that ability to draw you in and make you feel like he's talking right to you.
Now, what are your guys' thoughts on, aside from yourselves, a band having a few drinks before they go on and do a show?
Come again?
What are your thoughts? Let's say you paid 20 or 30 bucks to go see like one of your favorite artists or whatever. What are your thoughts on them having a few drinks or a few whatevers before they come out and do the show?
Oh, I follow.
Depends on who I'm seeing, but I you know, we all do it. We all throw a couple drinks back. I don't have the tolerance for wanting to go see someone plastered and ruining the show. I think that's already done, you know.
And
it was cool when, yeah, Jim Morrison did it in the Doors when nobody knew what the hell was going on with rock and roll where it was headed, but now it's just tacky to be that much of a mess on stage. If you're talking about, like, a band coming out completely sloshed, you know.
Yeah, the last one I could think of is I saw Amy Winehouse in town, you know, several years ago, and it was that kind of thing. Like, boy, when she sang on stage, she was golden. Everything stood still. It was just outstanding. And then in between songs, you wanted her to start. You were embarrassed for her. It was like, just shut up and play your next song because you're totally an embarrassment.
Well, the reason I ask was at the beginning of the summer, a big guy in the Chicago music scene had a brand new band, first show for this band. It was at the Metro, so it was kind of a BFD. And he did the exact same thing. He came out just hammered, couldn't get his guitar on, couldn't get the first song started. Band behind him was really upset. But this is where it gets interesting. The crowd was kind of split between, yeah, fuck this guy, I paid 20 bucks to come see this show, not for him to get wasted. Mm-hmm. And then the other half being like, well, this is what you expect when you go to a show like this. I'm sure some people in the Amy Winehouse crowd were loving that because they were finally seeing what everybody was talking about for all of her shows. Do you guys think there's anything to be said for that's what you should expect when you go to a show like this?
No. I don't think there's a... I don't know if I'm saying no or yes to the answer correctly, but there's the element, and that exists, and especially if you know the artist you're going to go see. If you know this artist wrote all his music in a heroin coma, you know what, man? The guy's not going to possibly be stone sober. You got to be expecting that and love it for what it is, you know? Now, if it's somebody that's a consistent great artist and does not have problems and all of a sudden just goes on a bender and ruins a show, that's different. You kind of knew what you were in for when you were walking in an Amy Winehouse show. It's like you knew what you were in for when you were going to Guns N' Roses show in 88.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you knew what to expect. You know what I mean? Like you knew, or not, you didn't know what to expect. That's also what made some of it great. So, you know, if I'm going to see Peter Gabriel, I'm going to expect him to be totally with it because he's charging $100 a ticket, you know. But again, it depends. You know?
And money has a lot to do with that, too. I've gone to a lot of shows where even with people with, even if you don't apply alcohol or drugs to it, and just what about their performance? It's like, I paid for you to sing, and you know, I think of some of these artists that when it gets to the chorus, they put the microphone out to the crowd, now let me hear you. And there's I'm all for audience participation, but if you're doing it to half-ass
the show,
to hear
these guys sing the song.
Exactly. Right. The tone-deaf guy next to me, I hear him singing it, at the gym. I don't need to hear him sing it at the stage when I paid $100, $150 for some of these big.
I've never thought
items.
Of that aspect of the live show before. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, so the album Catman Don't, it was out in July. Any talks of getting back into the studio for new recordings?
Absolutely. That's already in process. Capitalizing off of what we had already done with having the home studio, we're now in a fortunate situation where 3/5 of the band has various aspects of home studios.
Yeah, we kind of just we just sat down and we thought of a really budget friendly way to do this. I had a career for a while, a pretty good career as an engineer and producer, and I still do it occasionally, just not as a primary career. So I have the access to great rooms. So we went, I was like, hey, let's go over to Rax Tracks Recording, book a room. Use the room, get great drum tones, get a good bass tone, use all the great tube gear, a controlled environment. But, hey, I've got chops. Scott's done his own engineering and producing for years, too. He's got chops. We both have our own Pro Tools rigs. It's like, the vocals and guitar tracks, we've got a couple great mics. We've got a couple great mic pre's. So why don't we, do the big stuff in the big room, take it back, and we can just email the tracks back and forth. He'll cut his keyboards, send it to me, and I'll assemble them in the session. Then I'll send him a rough and bring the guitar players into his house. He'll just record the guitar, show the mic up, get a great tone, make it work, email it back to me, I'll throw it into the session. Then I'll shoot to his house, or he'll come to my house, we'll do the vocals, and then I can edit everything, get everything set together, and Scott can add whatever to the tracks he wants as well. This is the beauty of the email and sending his files back and forth. And then we'll go back to Rax Tracks or another big room and get on like an SSL and mix the tracks. The foundation of the music, the stuff that's really going to give it the beef and the width are going to be in the drums and in the bass. That's where you're going to get a lot of the warmth. And then the other stuff with the right, having access to still using good gear in our own controlled environments for no money allows us, a lot of time and effort to put all the colors and the vocals and all that without the stress of being in a studio situation. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you brought up the beauty of email to where you don't have to all be together in order to get something done. With that, and I know from personal experience, even with Pro Tools, even when you send something, it doesn't mean that's how it's going to end up on the other side. Have you guys had problems with emailing certain tracks and then end up having them either not get sent or get corrupted
use email. You do a Dropbox thing or something. But yeah. No, they don't. They don't. These are straight files. It's just how many times has somebody downloaded a track paid 99 cents and downloaded a track from iTunes and it's been corrupted or weird? It's never happened to me.
Really?
I've never heard of it happening.
I've had one recently that I've been in.
The audio files, I've never had a problem with it, personally, and if it happens, it's just send it again.
And me, Turan, and Tim Kubiak, the other guitarist, three of us are very technical oriented I always like to say there's half a dozen ways to skin a cat. So, if plan A, B, and C doesn't work, well, let's go with plan D. And so we're always able to find a different way. And I think that also helps with a lot of the music, too, is just all these different environments. And come to think of it, every single album that we've done has been, hodgepodge is a bad word because it sounds like it's just thrown together, but because of having all these different environments, these different personnel, these different instruments,
a properly seasoned stew.
Nice, yeah. It's like a big smorgasbord,
I like that question, though. It's because I never even thought about, especially in the last 5 to 8 years, I've never even thought about the the quality of a file being sent and getting corrupted because it hasn't happened. So now maybe you just added some paranoia to my life. But that's a great question and something definitely.
Well, I mean, when you work with someone with like Pro Tools, I mean, it takes one button just to do something crazy. Because I mean, like I have had problems like sending certain tracks or certain files via email or whatever. But like, even if you don't save it properly, you're gonna have like bits and pieces of
well, that's
stuff
that's
all over the
that's
place.
Where that's where the you know doing it as a professional like I've always
probably
known
comes
how to,
in handy.
Known how to, I've known how to save it. You know those.
Right.
I went through those trials and tribulations of Pro Tools back in 1999. You know when it was still like Pro Tools version 2. I've been using it since it first came out. I started engineering and using. I worked off of 2-inch analog tape for years before I even got into Pro Tools as use, you know, as a primary use in the studio. So I've seen back then files would be corrupt like constantly, and there was always, you know, that's when you had to spend $200 or $300 just to have 1 gig of storage, and you had to figure out ways to, you know, condense your tracks and do everything like that. So I'm definitely not a stranger to corrupted files. It just has not been anything that I've ever had to face in the last 7-8 years. And maybe, like you said, maybe it's just the way it's being saved, the way, because there's many options and many ways to save tracks. Import tracks, you know, you can import the full audio, or you can import the session data, which has your edits, or you bounce that and make a track. You know, there's 1,000 different ways. That's one of the beauties of it too. There's 1,000 different ways to do something. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the bottom of it, I suppose.
Last question I got for you. You got the show coming up at Martyrs on Saturday. What does the rest of 2012 look like for Fisher's Flicker?
2012 is grinding till close, but we got two tunes that we're recording right now that are both incorporated into the live show, and again, like for us, that means in the live show, not only do we have the songs, but we also have the videos. So there's these videos that are created for it as well, and we recorded these two tunes, and we're finishing the all the tracking for that, and then. You know, as soon as those are done, then demos are started for the next two, and so we'll keep cranking those out. So I would say realistically, we'll definitely have another two tunes out this year. An admirable aim would be to have four. So we'll see how the winter, you know, works out for us.
Well, best of luck with the upcoming shows and the upcoming new music. Thank you guys again for stopping in here today at Fearless Radio. What song are we going to be leaving on?
Let me remember. Year of the Locust.
Anything you'd like to say about it before it gets played?
Don't look at me.
Yeah, this is a good one. You know, yeah, this is a smoky bar, mad at a chick for messing things up song. It's a good one. Yeah.
Fisher's Flicker here on Fearless Radio, the new music binge.